Joseph was left by his brothers in a pit to die because he had a gift. Several gifts, actually. He was handsome. He had a way with words. He could interpret dreams, his own dreams and those of others. He had a beautiful coat that his father had given to him. And he was ambitious. Through a long sequence of events, his gifts landed him in the service of the king of Egypt, where, after more close calls, he thrived and became a powerful and respected person, the very hand of the Pharaoh. Because there was a famine in Canaan, the land of Joseph's family, the brothers who had thrown him into a pit in a jealous rage came to Egypt to beg for food. They were sent to the hand of the Pharaoh. They didn't recognize their brother. How could they? It had been years. But perhaps a better question is, how could they not? But they didn't. But Joseph recognized them, loved them, had compassion for them in their suffering. He put them through some trials and eventually revealed himself to them and invited them to move their families, his family, to Egypt, a rich and prosperous land. And they did. And then 400 years passed. And with the passing of time, so did generations of the descendants of Joseph and his brother's father, Jacob, also called Israel. In the passing of generations, the Hebrews in Egypt, it is written in the book of Exodus, something happened. The descendants of Israel were fruitful and swarmed and multiplied and grew very vast, and the land was filled with them. And a new king arose over Egypt. He had forgotten about Joseph. Maybe he never knew about him or about how all these Israelites got there in the first place, but he perceived that they posed a threat to his kingdom. And he said, "Look, the people of the sons of Israel is more numerous and vaster than we. Come, let us be shrewd with them, lest they multiply. And then, should war occur, they will actually join our enemies against us and go up from the land." And the Egyptians abused them and made their lives bitter. They made them work, building their cities of mortar and brick, and made them work in the fields. And the harder the Egyptians made their lives, the stronger and more fruitful the Hebrews became. And the Pharaoh became even more afraid. And in his fear and loathing of these interlopers, he came up with a plan, a horrible plan that could never work, and one that would ultimately backfire on him and on his people. He told the Hebrew midwives to kill all the newborn boys. Of course, they didn't. And when the king asked them, "Why did you do this then and let the children live?" they answered him shrewdly, "The Hebrew women are not soft like the Egyptian women. Before the midwives get to them, they already give birth." And when the king had turned his back and walked away, muttering in disgust, the midwives smiled and winked to each other. And the king issued a proclamation, "Every boy that is born you shall fling into the Nile, and every girl you shall let live." He proclaimed this to all of his people. And then a Hebrew boy was born. His mother hid him for 3 months and loved him and nurtured him. For those 3 months, she lived in fear for the life of her child. She became desperate And in her desperation, she did the only thing she could think of. She took a basket, also called an ark, and caulked it with resin and pitch to hold out the water of the Nile and to keep her baby dry and afloat. Placed the boy child in it, placed it in the reeds by the banks of the river. She might have said a prayer. Nobody knows, but she must have. The baby also had a sister. When she saw what her mother had done, she was a curious girl, and so she hid a ways away to see what would happen to her brother. What she saw was this. Of all people, Pharaoh's own daughter had come down to the banks of the Nile on that fateful day with her maids to bathe. Lo and behold, what is this? A basket, or is it an ark, floating in the water? And from the sound, and from it the sound of a baby crying. She sent her slave girl to fetch it up out of the reedy bank. When she opened it, she recognized immediately that this is one of the children of the Hebrews. One might think that the daughter of the Pharaoh would have thought twice about disobeying her father's command. Remember her father's command, every Hebrew boy who is born you shall throw into the Nile. But she did not. She did the exact opposite. She took him out of the Nile and saved him. And the baby's sister, who was not only curious but brave and smart, walked right up to the daughter of the king and said to her, "Shall I go summon a nursing woman from the Hebrews that she might suckle the child for you?" The king's daughter said, "Go." So the baby's mother was brought, and her baby boy was returned to her arms to be nursed and cared for. This lasted 3 years, at least until the child was weaned and the mother was in no hurry to wean him. It was from his mother that he learned to speak Hebrew, and here that he learned who he really was. It tore a hole in her heart when she had to give her child back to the king's daughter. But a deal was a deal. The king's daughter took the boy into her home, the home of her father, the king of Egypt, and raised him as her son. We don't know what the king thought of this, but she was his daughter after all, so he let it be. She gave him, the boy, an Egyptian name. She called him Moses, which means, in Egyptian, the one who is born, the son. He, like so many people, places, and things in this story, his story, our story, has another name, Moses, for from the water I drew him out. We know nothing about the years that Moses spent in the royal palace. This is where he learned to speak Egyptian. Was he pampered? Maybe even groomed to be the hand of the king like his ancestor Joseph so many years and generations before? Or was he perhaps that proverbial red-headed stepchild who knew that he was out of place, feeling inadequate, a stranger in his adoptive home? There's a hole in the story here, and as with many holes, it is full of possibility. Here's what happened after he grew up. He left the palace, went out to his brothers, the Hebrew people, and he saw the crushing burdens that they were living under. One day he saw an Egyptian striking a Hebrew man, one of his siblings. He looked around to see if anybody was around to witness what he was about to do. apparently there was no one there because he killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand. Then things started to happen fast. Word got around that Moses had killed the Egyptian. It got back to his step-grandfather, Pharaoh, and a bounty was put on his head. He fled to the land of Midian, a land with no fixed boundaries, because the Midianites were a nomadic people. This fit perfectly with his life thus far. Moses was a stranger in a strange land. His identity was as fluid as the Nile from which he was drawn. Now the man who was drawn from the water was living in the desert, and still he was drawn to water, so he went to a certain well. And at this certain well, he met a certain woman named Zipporah, which means bird, the daughter of a priest named Jethro, also known as Reuel, and they were married. And they had a son named Gershom, which means a sojourner have I been in a foreign land. Moses took to tending sheep, his father's flocks, and it suited him because it kept him on the move. Movement and tending to a flock of living beings came naturally to Moses. He drove his flock into the wilderness, some say even beyond the wilderness, and he came to the mountain of God, to Horeb, also called Sinai, which means something like the parched mountain. It was dry that day on the mountain. It was always dry, and somehow a bush had caught fire. Strange, Moses thought. This bush is burning, and it isn't burning up. How can this be? I need to stop and take a look. A voice came from the fire and called him by name, Moses, Moses. He had stopped, he had looked, and now he listened because he heard. He had no choice but to respond. Here I am. This is me. I am here. No person, even a person whose life had been as full of change and chaos as Moses's up to this point, could have possibly imagined what would come next, and especially what he was getting into, and how his life would be changed after stopping, looking, listening, and responding. The first thing the voice told Moses to do was to take off his sandals and place his bare feet on holy ground. Moses did as he was told. He felt the power vibrating from the earth up through his body. And then the voice identified itself. I am the God of your ancestors. And Moses hid his face. One might ask oneself, where has God been all this time, up to this moment in the desert? God had been waiting and watching the plight of his people. Was God waiting to see if the Hebrews could work things out for themselves? Or if the Egyptians would have a change of heart? Was God waiting for the right person to be born, to lead the revolt and the next journey, this time out of Egypt to the promised land? God is the great mystery, and God's motives are sometimes inscrutable. But that day on the mountain, when Moses stopped and looked, a tipping point was reached. It was the right person at the right time. It was time to move. Moses wasn't so sure. He peeked between the fingers of his hands as he muttered, "Who, me? I should go to the Pharaoh? He already hates me for so many reasons." and demand that he release the people? And then what? I should bring them out of Egypt? God said, yes. And furthermore, you will lead them out and you will pass by this very mountain and you all will worship me here. Moses knew that he would be met with suspicion by his own people if he showed up out of nowhere, out of the wilderness, with a message from God that it was time to get up and go and that he would lead them. He had no authority, and he had been gone for a while on the run for murdering an Egyptian. But he was starting to gain some confidence, standing there with his eyes covered, barefoot, talking with a burning bush. He said, look, when I come to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? And God said to Moses, the name which is not a name, because God is unnameable, also known as the name above all names, I am who I am, also known as I will be who I will be. Tell them that being and becoming has sent you, and I am and I will be, and this is a great mystery, and if they don't understand that, remind them that I am the God of their fathers. You'll see. They'll follow you. It took some more argument and some more convincing for Moses to accept his calling, but God was patient with him and persuasive. And the bush kept burning and was not consumed, and the bush is burning still. Moses was convinced to give it a try. He had been through so much already, and somehow had survived. He had floated in a tiny ark in the Nile, lived in a royal palace, killed a man, ran away, found a new home among nomads, got married, fathered a child, wandered in the wilderness, and now this, a burning bush, and the voice of God telling him to do something unimaginable, free his people. Then what? What could possibly come next? He had no idea. He had no idea what to do or how to do it. And so he went. Amen.